What are the predictors of a student being successful at school and ultimately in life? So much of success is directly tied to our children's environment at home. Regardless of the type of school your children are in, whether it's 5 days a week, collaborative, or even homeschooling, what you do in your home will directly impact the long-term success of your goals. Join us as we look at the essential habits and practical to-dos that should be in every home involved in raising up the next generation. The good news is that no matter where you are on the parenting journey, there is still opportunity to make a significant positive impact. So be encouraged and join us for this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for Raising the Next Generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Welcome to another episode of Basecamp Live. Davies Owens here. Thank you for taking time in your busy day to jump on board this podcast, an opportunity to be encouraged as we raise up the next generation. I want to start out with a special shout out to Matt Greco and his team at the Seattle Classical Christian School in the heart of the city of downtown Seattle. I had an incredible opportunity last week to be on campus with them, inspired by their remarkable work and the partnership that they have between their teachers and the home, really shining as a light right there. And as you know, Seattle's not the easiest place to run a classical Christian school. They're the only ones around in the area of downtown. And it's truly a light and a place that needs the encouragement of Jesus. And it's wonderful, Matt, what you're doing there. And so prayers go out to you and your team. I had the privilege of being a part of a teacher training event in an afternoon and then an evening of a parent education time. We talked about this topic of preparing our children for this cultural moment. And I've so enjoyed just getting out and being on campuses. I am traveling a good bit these days. Love to be on your campus. Reach out to me, info@basecamplive.com, or check out the Basecamp Live website for more details. This episode, I always like to thank those organizations that we believe in and that have a lot to offer us. America's Christian Credit Union, Classical Learning Test, Gutenberg College, and Wilson Hill Academy. A special thank you in particular for sponsoring this episode of Basecamp Live. In this episode, I get to sit down after 5 years, hard to believe that much time has gone past, as Mandy Moore, whose episode 5 years ago was on the collaborative model, this home and school collaboration that the Ambrose School, they call the Bridge Program. So many schools around the country are looking at these collaborative models, and I encourage that. I think it's a great solution that fits well next to five-day schools and even homeschools. Mandy is an amazing, dynamic individual, and as you'll get to hear in this episode, she's perfectly positioned for this conversation because she is both a mom who has gone the distance with her youngest now almost all the way out of the K-12 journey, and she's an administrator who has started a school and has a great heart for the challenges that it takes to run a school and to collaborate well with parents. There are a lot of resources that she talks about. If you go to the show notes on the website, you can link to those specific resources and you can read more details of her full biography. But without further ado, let me jump into this encouraging conversation with Mandy Moore. Well, Mandy Moore, welcome back to Basecamp Live.
Hi, Davies. Great to be here with you.
It's so good to have you back on. And if folks didn't hear your prior episode, we'll definitely encourage them to do that because you've been in this education world your whole life. And what I love about this conversation we're about to have is that you have the experience as a parent and as an educator. You really have a foot firmly planted in both worlds. But for folks that don't know your story, share a little bit about your family world and your educational journey.
Well, my grandparents were educators. My parents were career educators. And so I grew up in classrooms and loved school my whole life. Went on to minor in education at Texas Tech University, and completed my teaching certification in secondary composite science. But it wasn't until I had children of my own that I actually discovered Christian classical education and also the collaborative model. And right away, I knew that's exactly what God had called us to do as parents. And that's what I wanted for my own children. And the nearest school of the kind was 2 hours away in Austin. So it was either pick up and move to Austin or start a school. Yep. So we looked at moving to Austin, actually, because starting a school is difficult and controversial sometimes. And in the end, we felt called to help get this going in my husband's hometown, Brownwood, Texas. And so we served on the board, and I was blessed to experience that from administrator, teacher, and parent role. My family's still involved in that school back home, and it's fun to see it flourish. But in 2015, our family relocated here to the Treasure Valley, and we started school at the Ambrose School at that time. And the first year we were here, the headmaster called me into his office and said, "What do you think about university model?" And I said, "Well, I love it. That's what we were doing in Texas." And he said, "You were?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I just thought everyone in Texas knew about it." And he said, "I really want to know if that would work here at the Ambrose School." So
yeah.
At that time, I got to help get that project going and have been here from the beginning. And so it's wonderful 7 years later to see the
bridge. It is amazing to see. Yeah. In fact, my youngest son was in the bridge, I think the first year that we were getting started with high school there. So it's, and for folks that don't know, just to circle back on a couple of things here. So university model is really collaborative. That's another kind of name for that. And it's fascinating to me and encouraging looking nationally, even internationally, you know, the growth in classical Christian education. There's certainly all sectors are growing, but this idea of kind of combining forces with the home, and some days of the week are at school and some days are at home. I think it's a beautiful model. And it really, for the point of the conversation, we're going to jump into this idea of working collaboratively. You can't get around it in a collaborative school, but in a five-day school, there's just as much collaboration needs to happen. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. But I want to make sure folks understand a little bit of your own, with your parenting hat on. So talk about your kids for a second, because this is not all theory and your kids are in kindergarten. Like you've lived this.
Yes. So my daughter is a freshman in college, and she's running for Utah State University, cross country and track. And she completed her education at Ambrose, so pre-K through 12th grade. She was classically educated. And then my son, Kevick, is here on our campus, and he's a freshman in high school.
Wow. So we're going to get into this, and I don't want anybody thinking, well, Mandy's just one of those overzealous administrators who has no idea how hard it is in our homes. Like, no, you've lived the home side of this too. Every day you still live the home side of it.
Yes. And so most of what you hear today is from my failures, right? In the parenting role, or what I've seen, or what I wish I could do different, or what that vision is that we know we're never going to reach it, but we need that target to shoot for, because it actually keeps us on the right path. So. Wow. It's not a perfect world. It's very difficult, but there's a lot of hope in what I see, the level of commitment that I see now from families.
So. Well, and I think it's just really a word of encouragement from the beginning, because it's easy to listen to something like this and go, okay, well, I'm not doing that, and I'm not doing that, and I'm a loser parent. Like, well, hold on a minute. Lots of grace. Never too late to jump in.
Right.
But we're talking not theory. We're talking about like real practice of, because you've experienced collaborative as you're running here, but you've also been in a five-day as a mom. So you've seen all of that.
Yes.
And then to reiterate on the educator side of this, I mean, your own journey, starting a school, the realities of a classical Christian school, the DNA, I mean, I don't know if there's a DNA gene for classical education, but you've kind of grown up in it. So what that side of it deeply as an administrator. All right, well, let's jump in, because there are a lot of indicators of what success looks like. And I think it's always hard when you're a family, you live on that side of the proverbial fence. When you're an administrator, you're on the other side. And it's so hard to have that collaboration. And this is something that is a 13-year journey. We're raising up the next generation. So let's jump right in. When you think about what success indicators look like with that partnership between home and school, walk us through some of those top ideas.
Well, there are 10 that I've listed, and I know there are many more, but I feel like I could really distill it down to, if families can commit to these 10 things, they can ensure that they're getting the most value they can from their Christian classical school. And I would divide those into three primary categories. And the first is that parents have to be primary. They have to be the first and most influential teachers in their kids' lives. The second thing is parents are the protectors. The school can't be the one. The parents actually have to be that front line of defense to keep their kids from being malformed by the culture around them. And then the last thing is parents are most powerful when they're in community. And so I would boil it down into those three things.
Yeah, and we're gonna unpack all this for you. So let's start with this first idea of parents are primary. What do you mean by that? Because I could, again, somebody saying, well, sure, if you're in a collaborative school. But no, this is for everybody. So what does that mean, parents are primary?
Well, our scripture of our campus is Deuteronomy 6:4-9. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." And I want to pause there and just point out that the first thing that parents have to do is love the Lord, and that and He has to come first in their home, in their habits, in their daily catechism of their children, the theology that they're teaching in their home, and just their worship, both at home and in the church, is crucial. And then if you continue right after that, which is what Jesus had quoted as the greatest commandment, He said, "And these words that I command to you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes." And here we see that it is the job of the parent to impress the hearts of the children. So there's two key words there. We see command, which is basically indicating He's your Lord, and so you're following His orders. And the second word that stands out is heart, and that is the training of affections or loves. And so what I know to be true about education is that children are going to love what their parents love, and it's almost unavoidable.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's, again, we live in I talk about all the time, the outsource culture. We drop our dry cleaning off to be clean and our car to get the oil changed. We drop our kids off in the carpool line to get an education and to love Jesus. And we'll pick them up after our busy day. And that is not the way our schools work. Our parents, but again, we want to unpack this a little bit because there is a sense in which we're definitely looking to the school to carry a certain portion of that weight. But you're saying that too often maybe parents step back further than they should.
I would say it's the mindset of they need to have extreme ownership over that education. And I think I would want all of my parents in our campus to be thinking, it is my job to educate these children. And so I need to be doing everything I can. And if you look at that verse, I mean, it's when you rise and when you go to sleep, and it's when you go and when you stay at home. And so I don't know when there is other time with your kids. And so it basically just means at all times, parents should be on the alert and ready to teach. Yep. So anything they see that they come up, they should be having those conversations. And I love the saying from access.org that it's not 1,000-minute conversation that you need to have with your kids. It's 1,001-minute conversations.
Yeah.
And it's just a particular mindset that I'm looking for in our families, that they're owning the education. But even when they delegate to us, they're still in touch. They know what's happening. They're a part of it. They're communicating with the school. They're strengthening the school by their involvement. And so there's nothing that they're ever hands off with.
Right. And there's that phrase, or Latin phrase that we often throw around and sounds very sophisticated, in loco parentis, really meaning biblically the authority is given to the parent, and then we, the school, are only under the authority of the parent. So that is actually the structure that most all of our schools would say it's absolutely critical to being successful. This is not hand off your kid to the government school or whatever else and we'll take care of it from here, which is really what we don't want.
Right. And we can't ignore God's design. We can only take children as far as the parents want them to go.
Right.
Or the parents have prepared them to go.
So, absolutely agree with that. So continue with that idea. So parents is primary. What else would that look like?
So the next thing I have is they need to join the great conversation themselves. So most of us who have been in the Christian classical world understand that we're reading about truth, goodness, and beauty because we're wanting it to shape our souls, to shape our affection. And there's a disconnect when parents say, "Hey, I didn't have this, but I want better for you, so go and do this great thing." Kids don't really respond as well to that. And they don't care that we didn't have that when we grew up, but they want us to do it with them. And so what I would want every parent in our school to do is to look at the reading list when it comes out in May about what their kids are going to be reading next year, and they would get on Audible as fast as they can and start listening to all of these works so that they're ahead of their children, so that they've heard the story, they're familiar with the themes. And so when their child comes to them, like my son did the other night at 11 o'clock, I just woke up and someone's standing by my bed and I said, "What's going on?" And my son said, "I can't sleep. Frankenstein is so disturbing." And so, you know, it's hard for parents, but unfortunately, teenagers like to have late night conversations. And if you haven't read the book, you're in a bind at that point. There's nothing to offer them. But when you have, it's so amazing to get to have that conversation and to relate that to what they're living in right now and how we can see God's truth in that and how we can find hope in the midst of that uneasiness and the fact that sometimes it's good when we feel uneasy.
Well, I think you're hitting on something. Again, all of these I feel like are worthy of an entire podcast, but we got to get through all 10 of these. But I do think, just to make a point there, Mandy, it's really important. I mean, most, you know, I'm often in speaking with groups of parents around the country, and I'll often ask, how many of you, as my first questions, grew up classically Christian educated? And maybe one hand will come up. So almost all of us listening have had that intimidation moment where we're like, oh my gosh, my fifth grader is now ahead of me when I graduated high school in literature. And so it's a sense of insecurity, I think, that sometimes we're almost like, I don't know that I want to be in a great conversation because I think I'm going to be made to feel inadequate as a parent. So I know you want to, how do you balance that?
I feel that way. I'm trying to lead this school and I didn't have that background. And so I always feel like I'm playing catch up. And I think the way that I would encourage parents is it's your commitment to try. You're not trying to learn every single detail of that book. You're just trying to read it and let it shape you and be able to have a conversation. And so you shouldn't make it harder than it is.
Right.
And I'm a very busy parent. And so I know that Audible has saved my life. I know if you just handed me this stack of books, it wouldn't actually be possible. I would get interrupted too much. But I can listen when I'm getting ready in the morning. I can listen on my camping trips a lot in the summer in the creek when I'm trying to cool off. And I can listen at night when I'm going to bed. And I will say that it got harder and harder. I did this with my daughter. So I can truly say I now have a classical education because I graduated with her and I read her reading list. But when I got to Brothers K, I just said, if it kills me, I will get through this book. If I sleep through half of it, I will
That's
get through
impressive.
The book. So I did and I love it. It's now one of my favorite works.
Maybe you should market. You can get a 2-for-1 education because you too can go through this book.
Exactly.
All right, keep rolling. What's the next one?
So the last thing I had under formation is habits. And this is really important for parents because we don't live in communities anymore with multi-generational families. And so we don't really have a situation where parents can look to the generations before to say, how can I be a good mom or how can I be a good dad? And with the mobility in our environment, it's very hard to learn how to be a good parent sometimes. And so we do need to educate ourselves and we do need to seek out help. And so a Christian classical school is a great resource. And we've learned a lot from Charlotte Mason, and we've read a lot. She's a British educator who just researched so much about education and did so many things beautifully with children. And so one of the things she says is that left to their own, children will develop bad habits that will actually malform their souls. And so it's the job of the parent to come in and to train them in habits. And just one example of that is the habit of attention. And that is a much, much needed habit. And I will just say that if parents don't have this on their radar, if they're not working on this at home, then when the child comes to school, they are going to struggle because it is very hard to read the works that we read with a very narrowing attention span.
Which again, a whole nother podcast is obviously, there's clearly a huge problem if home life consists a lot of screen time. And just, I mean, I talk to educators all the time. You see it where just even in the last few years, the attention span seems to be diminishing pretty quickly because, and sometimes I think moms and dads think, well, they've had a really hard day. They've read all these great books. Let's let them have a little screen time and fun. And that can be a very slippery slope because you're working against all those habits.
Yes, that's true. And that leads perfectly into our next category, which is how parents can actually protect their children from being malformed and formed in the shaped in the wrong way.
So why don't we take a quick break? I want to come back and we'll jump right into that because that is a very good point that, you know, we're, and I think especially we get the protector role when they're young and then we're trying to give them freedom as they get older into middle and high school. And sort of that's also, we're going to talk about that because where is that line? Because it's easy to abdicate and let go too early or to over control too late. So that's part of that protector role. We'll be right back and continue the conversation. As schools and families, we engage with businesses every day, and unfortunately, many of them are increasingly embracing more progressive ideologies and practices. That's why at Basecamp Live, we're proud to partner with America's Christian Credit Union, a banking institution that only serves and invests in kingdom causes. So whether you're managing a school, a home, a small business, ACCU can meet your banking needs while upholding biblical values. Find out why tens of thousands of families and ministries across the country, including Basecamp Live, have chosen to bank with ACCU by going today to americaschristiancu.com/basecamplive. You choose a traditional education for a reason. So why use standardized tests that don't reflect that? Basecamp Live is proud to partner with Classic Learning Test, which offers online academic assessments that strengthen a traditional education. CLT's assessments for grades 3 through 12 provide a meaningful metric of students' abilities, equipping parents and educators, and helping students pursue a fulfilling future. Explore CLT's assessments by visiting www.cltexam.com/Basecamp. So, Manny, when you think about parents as protectors, probably most parents are like, yes, I completely agree. Let's bubble wrap them up. We don't want them to get tainted by the world out there. But at some point, Opie has to leave Mayberry and go to the big city. And so that sort of tension between protecting and preparing, walk us through that. Because, I mean, obviously, there's a huge protector role here, but we have to let him go at some point.
Yes. And one of our Bible teachers shares this with our students. He said, fences do hold some things out, but they don't hold everything out. And so there's this idea of there is a safe place for them to grow and be nurtured without being inappropriately exposed to harmful content. And we do need to hold that out because we need to give them the taste for the true, the good, and the beautiful. And they can't do that if they're barraged constantly with the opposing things. And so we do want to give them that place to flourish. At the same time, we're putting them to work within those fences as well. But those fences keep kids in. And so that's the main thing that I'm getting at is the fences show kids God's law and natural consequences. And they show them that when you go outside the fence, it will be a curse. And so God has given you these parameters to live within. And it's just so dangerous in this day and age where society is telling kids, you just have to create your own boundaries and your own identity. And that's why I think that mental health is plummeting in our nation and around the world, because that's not the way God designed human beings. He designed them with very clear instructions of how to flourish and how not to flourish, and and that he does give us that choice. And so classical schools are trying to allow an opportunity for kids to learn that. But until they're formed, until they're capable of that decision-making ability, they should be protected. So there are three main things that I want all of our parents to do in this area. And the first is to limit screens. This is the number one threat, in my opinion, to the CCE movement and to schools fulfilling their mission. Because screens really undermine everything we're trying to do. Like you mentioned earlier, it plummets attention. Without attention, learning can't even occur. Memory can't occur. Relationships can occur. And so we do as parents have to protect that as our children's brains are forming. And unsupervised internet goes with that screen time of it's fine for us to sit down as a family and watch a show together. But every time I do, there's a conversation afterwards that I'm having with my son. Did you notice what choice that character made? What do you think about that? What do you think he should have done instead? What consequences did you see that came? And my kids kind of laugh because they know that's coming. Like they know if we're going to have family movie night, we're going to have to like debrief afterwards. And so they're kind of tired of me saying, you know, Disney World view again, here we go. So, but at the same time, I know that if I didn't speak into that space, then all of that content would have just had an impact on their soul with no protection whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it's giving them that layer of protection, helping them think through those things. Social media and smartphones, I mean, the studies coming out, no parent can deny this is the number one harm to our children in America right now. And so our school signed what we call a Postman's Pledge, which was started by a group of parents in Maryland. And basically, they just identified smartphones and social media as the two most harmful aspects of technology in relationship to kids. And so this group of parents came together and said, as a community together, we're not going to give these things to our children until they're 18, until their brains are properly formed. So I do hear the argument a lot. Well, then how can a kid ever learn how to responsibly use it? That would be like saying, I'm going to give marijuana to my 14-year-old because I want him to responsibly use it when he's 18.
Right.
And so that argument just doesn't make sense to me. I have a background in physical therapy. I've worked with traumatic brain injury, and I just know that the state of the brain matters for all of life. Your body is an integrated thing. And so any injury to your body is actually going to harm your life. And so at all costs, we need to protect our students' minds until they are formed, until they're an adult age to where they can start making those decisions for themselves and use it responsibly. Because at those ages, it's not as addictive.
Yeah. So. And that's definitely, I mean, again, I feel like every one of these I'd love to launch into a whole nother discussion, which maybe we'll do at some point. But that is the beauty of our schools, is we are engaged communities. And I think to see the school as an active collaborative community, so we're making these decisions together, because you'd never want to be that one or two, you know, the weird holdout parent who won't give the kid the smartphone and all the other parents have given in. So way easier to have sort of, I love the Postman Pledge, and there are a lot more we can talk about that, but that's absolutely excellent point. What else is under this parents protectors? Yeah.
Yeah. The next thing is pop culture. I think that parents don't realize the harm that it does to allow those types of things into your home and to allow, it usually comes in through media, kind of piggybacks on number one, that it starts to tell children who they are when they hear those messages from the world over and over and over. And it starts to shape them and they start to say those types of things. Well, if I don't have a phone, I'm weird, right? If I don't text all the time, I'm weird. And so it is an actual battle for their souls because the kingdom of God isn't popular. And so parents really do have to decide, do I want my child to love God or do I want them to be popular? Do I want them to kind of fit into what the world thinks they should be? And it, you can see it all the time. Like the more I can usually tell when any of my students get a phone because I will notice subtle changes in their personality or how engaged they are. And I think that it, when they're exposed to that a lot, they don't recognize the beauty of what we're doing here at school as much because they start to view it as, well, that's not what the world is telling me I should look like.
And so to that, again, everything is got so many elements that we could go into on this. But I mean, just to reiterate, because I think people listening are saying, well, we completely agree for our grammar schooler, but you know, that high schooler or, you know, high school daughter, we don't want her to show up at college and never have heard of Taylor Swift and be embarrassed because she has no idea. I mean, so at some point, and again, that's a lot, like how do you begin to give appropriate cultural awareness so you're able to sort of, what does that look like?
I would just say, how could you possibly not hear about Taylor Swift? Going to hear about it. They're going to hear about it. They're going to catch on.
Yeah.
I think the most encouraging thing to me right now is to hear from my daughter and hear conversations she's having with her roommates in her dorm and her friends on her team. And she's explaining to them, this is why I approach dating in this way. Like, I'm not going to date someone unless I'm wanting to marry them.
Right.
And they don't really understand that. That's counterculture. And they're like, why? You know, and so she'll start to explain, you know, well, this is the kind of home that I want. So I don't view this as a recreational activity. I have plenty of friends for that. But to me, that's going to build my home. I want a home that's, you know, in the Word of God, we go to church together. And so unless someone matches up with me on those types of things, then I really don't see it moving forward. And they're listening with interest and they say, I respect you for that. They don't understand it. It seems completely foreign to them.
Sure.
But they can respect it. That's what I want to see of our students. I know that they're going to go out. They're going to go into that world soon enough. And that is going to be around them. But I think that they're going to be viewed as rare exceptions. They're going to be viewed as hopefully people very comfortable. They know what they believe. They know why. They know what's important to them. And they're confident enough to live according to those convictions. And they can kind of let pop culture land where it is.
Well, I think, and it is what we talked about earlier, there's a myth or fallacy that we would need him to kind of try it out under our roof and make some mistakes because like we all did. And we just need to kind of, you know, give a little bit of freedom for them to fail. But I think that is a very dangerous, again, there's a fine line between that and creating the Amish kid who'd never seen a car before. I mean, you know, that kind of a balancing act.
You have to count the cost because parents need to realize every tool that they allow their child to hand up, it changes them fundamentally. Like it's not just the child using the tool, it's the tool shaping the child at the same time. And so parents need to read everything that Neil Postman wrote. Because it's he was way ahead of his time in warning parents, hey, we need to stop back and consider, yes, technology is great in many ways, but it comes at a cost.
Yeah.
And it will shape you, whether you think it will or not. It will shape your thinking. It will shape the way that you live. One resource that I do want us to put in the notes for the podcast is access.org, which gives me an email every Friday, and it lets me know what's happening in pop culture. So to speak to your concern. It's great because every Friday I talk to my son and I say, hey, here's one of the most popular songs. Here are the lyrics. Let's talk about this. He already knows what that song is. I don't know how because he's on screens very little, you know, but he has friends and he's out in the world. And so that's what I say. Like to me, I don't see how any child is going to show up on a college campus and not know about those things. But what's more important is, do they love those things or not?
Right.
And so, you know, and how much of that is it a part of their life?
It is a battle of the loves. And just to reiterate, because we are, as we go through this, you've compiled a number of fantastic resources that are in the show notes that are on basecamplive.com. So people can go there and download links and connections to resources that you're mentioning here. So, okay, can you, what else?
The very last thing is addictions. And so, of course, all of these things are interconnected. When kids have screen time or they have unsupervised internet access, they are going to become addicted to porn. They're going to become addicted to social media. They're going to become addicted to screen time in general, binge watching, that sort of thing. It's a neurological fact. And so that is something that the Ambrose School talks to parents about in every parent interview is, you know, a lot of parents will say, well, what's the right age to give your child a phone? And we say, well, as soon as you want them addicted to porn, that's when, you know, for boys, that's when you give them a phone. And I think it is time for parents to wake up because this is predatory. This is, you know, selfish people looking to gain from our children. And parents do need to wake up. None of the Mac executives give their kids any type of devices at all. They pay huge amounts of money to send their kids to school with no technology. And that's because they know that they stand to gain a lot. And so parents really do have to be willing to be different. And be willing to take that stand for the sake of their child because it is going to shape them.
Well, and the beautiful thing we often say in classical Christian education is that, you know, a lot of times they will say, you know, I was picking out a school for my child and I found a community for my family. And I think, again, we're meant to live in community. And so these norms become norms of the whole community. We can live the good life because we're not stuck on a phone the whole time. And there are, you know, we talk a lot on the podcast about it's not just say no. It's positive in terms of we're aiming towards this good life. There's also positive answers to, well, how am I going to communicate with them in eighth grade after their soccer game? Like, well, there's things like the light phone that I promote. I mean, there's things that are definitely answers to those practical problems that are not just go give in and do what everybody else is doing.
But you're exactly right, Davies. I hear, you know, when the students are grammar age, parents are 100% on board. Mm-hmm. And I'm completely on board. And around junior high, that's when the pressure starts to come.
Absolutely.
And I will just say, I waited until I thought it was the last possible moment to give my daughter a phone or a smartphone or access to be recruited to social media. And I, looking back now, I could have pushed back. There were other ways to do things. And so I learned the first go around. And I do think parents need to push back because once you let it out, then it really does feel impossible to roll it back.
Well, and again, the reality behind it, though, is that majority of families, parents, us adults are just as consumed in all of this. Yes. So it's very difficult to be on our high horse about how bad it is. And then not only do they just see us on it, which is a little bit hypocritical, but I don't know that we want to give it up. And I'm saying that we generally as just parents in America today, even Christian parents that are, you know, especially, well, I think all millennial Gen Z, I saw a stat recently, there's only 7% variance in screen use between Gen X, which is who I am basically, and Gen Z. So it's easy to kind of act like it's just the younger people, but we're just as strung out on as anybody.
It's true. There's no escaping it. A lot of the resources I'm going to share with parents are through an app on my phone. I think it comes down to intention and limits. Like it's just mm-hmm. something you have to think about and make a decision before.
Yeah.
How am I going to use it and how is it going to shape me? And if the benefit is not tremendously outweighing the harms, then mm-hmm. that's when we need to say no.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we want to touch on one more before we go to a break.
We're ready for the next category.
Well,
already,
the next category is going to be parents are powerful. That sounds really good. So we're superheroes. Is that right?
Okay. That's true.
Well, why don't we take a break? Because we're going to come back. I want to jump into that. That'll be a fun topic to end on. Be right back after the break. This episode of Basecamp Live is sponsored by the Heritage Program at Gordon College, a nationally ranked Christian liberal arts college located just north of Boston. We were made to flourish, but what does that look like? The Heritage Program invites your students to explore this question. Heritage is a one-week summer program for high schoolers to experience life in Christian community. They will see the good life in practice as they live on campus, learn from professors, reflect on great text, cultivate deep friendships through discussion and creativity, and explore Boston and the North Shore. To learn more about this unique summer opportunity, visit gordon.edu/heritage. I want to take just a moment during our break and let you know about the great work that's being done by Wilson Hill Academy. They offer a vibrant, rich, and accredited classical Christian education available to families and schools almost anywhere. With a click of a button, students join master teachers and friends live online from all over the world to engage in deep and lively discussions, solve math problems, conduct science experiments, translate Latin, deliver thesis presentations, and so much more. At Wilson Hill, students make lifelong friends and graduate well-prepared for college and beyond. Discover what's possible for your family or school at wilsonhillacademy.com. Mandy, we're trying to identify 10 areas where if a family will engage even more deeply, it will just make such an incredible partnership with schools. And so walk us through again, because we're covering a lot of ground right here. So we're talking about kind of these three larger categories, beginning, I guess, with the idea that parents are primary. So walk us through, just quick review, and then we'll go through the last one.
Yeah, so for the formation, there were four things we talked about. Them loving God in their home and making him Lord. Number two, impressing his commandments on their kids. And that was just in the daily worship, daily reading that they're doing at home and the teaching they're giving theologically to their children. Biblical literacy falls under that. And then third was joining the great conversation, reading the great books, having those discussions with their children of what they're reading in school. And fourth was habit formation. Then we moved on to protecting them from malformation. And there were three items there, which was limiting screen time and unsupervised internet access. Number two was resisting the pop culture messages. And number three was preventing addictions.
Wow. Again, amazing. Now we're going to kind of, the third big category is parents are powerful. So that sounds great. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, just remembering your primary, God said, you teach your children. And he told parents to do that because he equipped us to just operate that way and to flourish that way. And so really, your voice is loudest. And so I've heard at meetings before, national conferences, educators and administrators say, what do we do when the parents don't align with us? And then, you know, we get this child who's scoffing at what we're doing in the classroom. And my argument would be we can't do anything about it because God gave that child to that parent. And so we as parents have to be very careful. We can't say one thing and then ask our kids to do another just because they've gone to a Christian classical school. So we really have to take ownership. Our voice is loud, but our voice is even multiplied when we're living in unity with other believers. When we put deep roots into a community and we say, I belong to this place and they belong to me, right? So it's a deep forging of relationships. So there are several ways families need to really look at this. Their family, if they come from a Christian home, even if they live far away, it's important that kids are connected to their heritage. Especially if they have a Christian heritage, talk all the time about my grandparents to my children because they didn't get to know them well. But their stories of faith inform my kids of who they are. It gives them deeper roots. They talk to their grandparents all the time, even though they're in Texas. When big things happen in their lives, that's who they want to call and share it with. And of course, we go back to visit regularly. So that's important. But a lot of us don't live close to family. And so then church becomes even more crucial, if that's even possible. God commanded us to be a part of the body of Christ. And that doesn't just mean watching an internet service from your sofa. It means going and physically being with other believers, even ones you don't understand or don't agree with. It means just submitting to that authority of the church and living as example. So, Josh Gibbs, on his website, he mentions every week Christians versus Christians who just go when it's convenient. And most of our families are members of a church, but I want them there every week unless someone is very ill. I want them there every single week because it tells our students who they are in Christ. And then the last thing is putting deep roots in your school where you are. So it's important to me that in our classes, not only do the students act as a unified class, but those parents act as a unified class. And they know deeply about each other. They know when someone's going through something, they come alongside them. They regularly get together just to have fun, just to know each other, because it's very inspiring to be around people who have the same goals and same vision as you. And so when you're having a hard time, they're there to lift you up and get you back on track. And then the local place, the place that you live. Wendell Berry talks a lot about why belonging is so important to identity and why our nation is fractured because we're separated from our local communities. We're kind of just thinking of ourselves as a big city or a big nation rather than actual people and that usually it's hard to get mad at someone you know well. And so on Fridays, our grammar school does the essentials. They have heavy Monday through Thursday so that Friday they can go out in the community. They can go on field trips. They can go learn about the world where they live so that they're more in touch and their identities being forged in those ways.
So when you think about belonging, again, there are a lot of folks listening in very different circumstances. You have some, perhaps some are homeschooling, some are in hybrid collaborative, and they've already carved out a portion of their schedule in their life to kind of work in that community. And then you've got families that are very busy, dual income just to afford the tuition. They're in the 5-day. They're probably the hardest ones to figure out how do you really lean into that community. And I know just from my years as an administrator, there's even some tension between parents. Like, well, you're the stay-at-home mom and I have to go work. And like, what advice do you have? Because everybody's going to have different capacities, I guess, in different seasons.
I think it comes down to mindset. Like we were talking about earlier, there are varying amounts of time. Most of the parents in my campus are busy as well. And I think it comes down to the mindset of we decide that we are going to be part of something bigger than ourselves, that we aren't just going to be this island making our own decisions, but we're actually going to consider the community in what we do. And so it is difficult. There isn't a lot of time. Every Friday night, I'm tired, but I've told my son when the weather's great, you can always have your class over Fridays to do a devotional and social time. By the time I get to Friday, I'm like, why did I say that? I'm exhausted. But when they actually come, it's wonderful. So I do think even busy families can carve out time. And I guess my argument would be if you're too busy to be deeply rooted somewhere, then you're too busy. And so things need to start coming off the plate.
Which is a whole nother conversation of just, you know, our fear of, you know, the FOMO fear that so many parents have that my child they're going to miss out and they're not going to get the scholarship if they don't get on the soccer team at age one. You know, now we're doing three travel teams and so sort of all of that sort of modern angst that parents feel. I think it's a good point. Like maybe we should reevaluate some of that. All right. Well, number 10, I feel like we should have a drum roll. So parents are powerful. What's the number 10 idea here?
Unity would be that. I would want our parents to have the mindset that we are truly partners with them. We have their best interests at heart. We're here to serve them, encourage them, equip them. And apart from them, like none of us would be here. That's why we're here. We have a heart for families. We want to see families honor God in their homes. And we want to share truth, goodness, and beauty with both parents and children. That's our whole mission. And so we need to realize we all are following the Lord. And so even though we may disagree on minor points, I think it's really important at the Ambrose Bridge campus that we focus on what we do all agree on. And so we have those core tenets. We all are seeking to have our identity in Him, abide in Christ. And so it makes the hard conversations easier because when you go in with that mindset, you're able to say the hard things that need to be said in love. And you're able to actually make progress and solve problems rather than just being offended. And so that's what's so beautiful. I see, many people when they move into the Bridge campus, they're reluctant to say anything when something negative happens. And I'm always saying, why didn't you let me know that? I'm happy to fix that. And they're like, well, I thought that was too small to come to you. I was like, well, it wasn't getting fixed, right? So it's not too small, right? So just having this growth mindset of, and this humility of none of us have arrived. All of us are failures as parents in many ways. Without redemption, that's a bleak place to be. But because Christ can redeem all things, He can even redeem my mistakes to help another mom, in other words. He uses everything. And so that's why we need community. We can't do this by ourselves. And if we want to really have the most powerful voice in the lives of our children, we need to stop trying to do it alone.
Well, I think and that's a great word to end on, just both encouragement that for those listening thinking, oh, I've so dropped the ball on this and my child's in high school, what am I to do? You know, or this is all new. Most families, to your point earlier, don't live near their extended family. I know so many families today say they're just sort of trying to figure out how to parent by, you know, whatever the trending voices are on YouTube or whatever their group think is. So we need each other in this community. And so Mandy, thanks for the guidance, encouragement, and it's encouraging to know that you've gone the distance with your own children. You're a mom, and you're also an administrator. And this is probably, without a shadow of a doubt, I think I often say it's the last best hope we have for changing a culture today. It's what happens when homes and schools and churches work together.
So, yes.
So thank you so much.
Thank you, Davies.
Well, you've done it. You've made it through another episode of Basecamp Live, and I sincerely hope that you've been encouraged along the way. Thank you for being such a faithful listener. And thanks again to America's Christian Credit Union, Classic Learning Test, Gutenberg College, and Wilson Hill Academy for sponsoring this episode of Basecamp Live. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you're listening from. We would love to hear from you and let us know what's on your mind, what questions you have. Email us at info@basecamplive.com. We really do appreciate you as a faithful listener. Take a moment and invite other parents and school leaders, anyone involved in raising the next generation, to listen to the podcast. And we will see you back here next week with another episode that you will not want to miss. Thanks again for listening.